No, I want to be out of here well before 6, so I can do the thing before 6. So if I can be out of here by 4:30, is the problem.
10:30.
4:30.
Yeah, that's, I don't speak in British standard time. I'm talking about 10:30 for me. You have to center around me.
That means,
I mean, everything is always about me.
That means you have like just about an hour. That's
and we've been spending talking about what? The time you got to go. But I understand. Let's do Paul. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is Mo and... Sweaty Jesus.
Every day.
Thank you. I was ready to go. And today, we are back. Maybe by popular demand, maybe not. So, this is a topic that we thought about.
Demand is questionable.
It depends on who, right? Our fan club of just two of us, right? Actually, no. I take that back. We do have some fans on the podcast. Shout out to our fans, our OGs from day one. This is a topic that we've been wanting to talk about, but we forgot about it. And then it just came to my mind. I was like, hold up. Wait a minute. We need to talk about this. And I was trying to find a tweet that really, you know, caught my attention about this particular topic. So by the end of this episode, we really hope that we've maybe disrupted your timeline a little bit about this, what's supposed to be a controversial figure. So today we'll be talking about I, Paul. Not like we're Paul, but like Paul from the Bible. And the tweet was something around, well, I don't know why Christians really still read Paul, the book of the Bible, because he's so misogynistic and against women and anti-women, yada, yada, yada. And for several reasons, it seems like Paul is controversial because he addresses topics like gender roles, sexuality, church authority. So today we'll be just, you know, talking about our own points and pointing it back to the Bible, of course. So yeah, Amede, starting with you. I'm sure you, I think you shared that tweet with me, if I remember.
I remember sharing. I can't actually remember the tweet. I'm sure I can probably find it in our history, but yeah.
I know, girl. Sorry, guy. Good luck with that. Our FBI agent and CIA agent, they're working overtime to like dig out that chat history. This is talked about. The fear of even scrolling past through everything we talk about is like, forget about it. Like, you know, once I was trying to look for culture, I put cult there. Come and see things that came out. I'm like, you think I am there now in a cult? Because we talk about culture a lot. the key search term was not keen at all. I'm like, see our lives. Yeah, but I remember the person who made that tweet, you know, she's, but I don't want to mention her name. Yeah, I don't want to mention her name. I mean, I'll mention it, but I'll take this part out. But you know the person, right?
I don't remember. You can text it. You can text it to me.
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah.
Oh, your friend?
Well, I won't call her a friend. I know of her. We have a lot of friends in common. We could like, actually be best friends.
Mm.
Yeah, I just texted it to you. Yeah, I don't want to...
But then that tweet killed the friendship.
Well, not really. You just contextualized it.
I
like,
messed
with you. No. I'm very generous. I mean, clearly, I'm still friends with you.
I mean,
It shows how magnanimous I am.
Yeah, we should definitely cut that part out. But this I'm going to say, maybe we could leave it in.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I kind of get it because it's kind of been in the air for a while, the whole sort of anti-Paul sentiment. And to be fair, it's if we're being honest, it goes back as far as the early church because
of course, yeah.
Right there in Acts, there's already anti-Paul sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
in Acts and in Paul's account of the sort of conflict with Peter. You're already seeing anti-Paul sentiment. There's Peter's later reference, you know, the same Peter, it's sort of, to some of Paul's letters being difficult, which you get the sense from the way he writes that that's, again, not just something Peter thinks. It's,
I know.
It's something that,
yeah.
It's something that, so I think it's not a new thing. It's always been there.
It's always been there. Yeah.
But I think it's experienced a bit of an interesting resurgence in the last
with the postmodernism, so. yes, and women's and then, movement,
Interestingly, particularly among sort of intellectual Christians.
Among what? Sorry, I didn't get that part. Among what?
Intellectual Christians.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I've noticed a bit of it there. Well, the funny thing is, there's a lot of it that is wrong and sort of it's something else I'll get to, because there's a whole rant that I have about trends is not really what I want, but I can't think of a better word, but some patterns within intellectual Christian circles I find so misguided, and I kind of have some thoughts on where they come from that I think lead to this whole sort of anti-Paul thing. But basically, yeah, there's a whole, my mind is going off on like 5 different tangents, by the way. That's why
I'm still waiting for you to land that chopper somewhere on this podcast. This podcast landing pad, like, when are we landing? Are we there yet? Let me sound like, are we there yet?
I guess what I'm basically saying is it's a long-standing thing that revives every now and then, and it has revived again sort of afresh within our sort of last decade or so, and very quite recent memory. I think it might be dying down a bit, actually. This is an interesting thing.
But I think it's that thing that would die out and come back again. You know?
It'll come back. But I think it might be dying down in the sense that... So it's like how new atheism is dying down, but it's also not dying down.
Yeah.
And what I'm thinking of is sort of how things happen within intellectual sort of scholarly academic circles.
Yeah.
But then it takes 10 years for them to sort of get into the mainstream to sort of get into arts and music enough that it then becomes mainstream. And so there's a thing where you start to see trends within academia, but you're not going to see those trends within the popular culture for another 15 years or so, if that makes sense.
I see.
So when I say it's dying down, I think it's dying down within sort of academia.
Yeah.
But then it hasn't sort of filtered down yet to the general public. When I say general public, so I think part of the challenge, because I read quite a bit of theological stuff and academic stuff, but I also really love intellectual Christians online. And it's interesting to see the gaps.
The gaps in between, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? In terms of what is happening within the scholarly fields that the intellectuals actually haven't caught on to yet. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So to that tweet, and this was probably 2-3 years ago, by the way, when this tweet came out, I kind of have a different approach to Paul. Because if you think about that, we can't talk about his works without contextualizing it to the times that it was written, right? It's kind of like the way people go back now and start getting offended about jokes, you know, that was written during this time. If I'm being honest, in my opinion, I think he was quite feminist considering his times, you know, and because he spoke a lot about women. Like when he talks about, for example, when women pray in church, so he's assuming already that they do take leadership roles, and he gave an example of them leading in prayer. And and one thing that is based on the location of culture, really, there, because it was around Corinth, you know, head covering, for example, was supposed to give women freedom and protection, as those without those head coverings were either slaves or other unprotected, right? So, again, when it talks about covering your hair and all that, it's a cultural context, right? And for him saying, you know, all women should cover their heads in worship, it gave them equal standing, you know, whether they were married, whether they were single, whether they were slave, whether they had protection. We can't just take that out of context and extrapolate it to this time and age. He's going to look like an arrogant jerk. And even when he gives like a lot of marriage tips.
Won't we all?
Exactly. It's like anyone listening to this podcast now in 2100 and something, be like, that guy was kind of weird. but today I don't seem weird, do I? And I also think that when he talks about marriage, knowing that he was going to be...
You know what? Sorry?
Oh, I mean, they just skim past that. Do you have to comment on everything? Shh. Don't give them enough for that. For us, for them to really confirm my witness. When we think about when he talks about marriage, as someone that knew that he was going to be single for life, there was a humility in him just saying, these are my thoughts, right? Not like this is what you should always do. So again, I really disagree with that strong sentiment that he was a misogynist. He was misogynistic.
I think, so I'm thinking of where it comes from, especially the more recent version of it. And I'm thinking that it's, on a level, it's kind of a fallout, I think, of the way it's been taught. Because, you know, Paul, like every great thinker, has been misread, misapplied. And obviously, Paul might well be the most influential thinker, period.
Period.
In history.
Period.
In terms of, I mean, and the reason why I'm saying Paul here instead of Jesus is in terms of people who actually wrote things down.
Yeah, yeah.
Which Jesus didn't do. So let me say writer, actually. Paul would be number one in terms of just the vastness, both the longevity and the breadth, right? Across different cultures and times and the sheer number of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the impact he's had in terms of how he's...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The influence he's had. Before we get to the depth of that influence, just the number of people he's influenced over, consistently over 2,000 years. I feel pretty sure it's a match, right? Like, because your average other thinker would have influenced intellectuals. So, for instance, you know, Socrates and all of that. Yeah, and Aristotle, they were obviously massively influential.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people have read them. Billions have read Paul. Right? Like, so I mean, just in terms of that sheer number. But then what I'm trying to say is when you have that many, that wide a readership, and you already know that there's always misapplication and misunderstanding of anybody's writings or thinking.
Yeah.
Why would we expect it to be less with the most widely read writer of probably all time? Right? And so I think there's an element of that. And I think there's an element where, again, this happens with all thinkers. People don't read them, or people read them in the light of how other people have interpreted them.
Yeah.
To not the for point themselves, where yeah. When they now read them, if they read them, they only read them through those lenses, which may not have been correct lenses or the most helpful lenses. Mm. And then you have all sorts of ideas that get taken out of context, like you said. And I think there's a lot of that has happened. So, and of course, even within the church, there's been misuse of Paul. And so, yes, Paul has been used to justify mistreating women. So it's, on one level, it's not surprising that some women would consider him misogynistic.
Yeah.
Because the experience of him, so to speak, has been negative. But then the question as to was that his intention is then a different question. But yeah. I think it's probably worth acknowledging that he has definitely been used in that way. And so it's not like the people who experience him in that way, they're coming from like a vacuum.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to many other things as well. In terms of, so I think the commonest charges levied against Paul are misogyny. Some people have tried to levy slavery, which is interesting. I'll come back to that.
Oh, wow. Really? That's new for me.
It's never, I don't think it's ever really held, especially when you consider that he also, slaves took a lot of hope from his writing. So it's sort of odd to dismiss the actual slaves who took hope from his writing and then try and say that he justified slavery because some other people used him to justify slavery. But again, people have used him to justify slavery. So like his commands to slaves and their masters have been taken as implying that he was on board with the whole thing. And then I think the other thing that's been levied at him is some people have accused Paul of misinterpreting Jesus, or worse, of sort of complicating the gospel. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. So sort of the idea of like, it's sort of this idea of Jesus preached this simple gospel, and then Paul comes with all of this complication and all of this extra stuff that he layers on top of it and just makes it a whole thing, and then creates institutional religion, basically. And maybe like Jesus' original plan was sort of, it's sort of this idea of, I'm caricaturing it a bit, but sort of this idea of Jesus, if we follow Jesus without Paul, would have just been like free spirits, you know.
Oh, I see.
sort of wandering about and just, you know, doing good and loving each other. And then Paul brings in all of these
like Roman,
all of this weird structure.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Obviously, I don't know. I think this may have been stronger, obviously, during sort of the hippie, sort of Jesus hippie movement.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think elements of it have persisted still. And then show up in different... So basically, what you find is when people are criticizing Paul, I'm not even sure they're necessarily aware of all of the influences coming in, but there's a bunch of all of these things coming together and then giving the people this idea of this rather weird guy who just comes in and makes... say something. Because Paul tends to speak strongly. And I think maybe that tone itself...
There's no doubt about that, yeah. I was saying that the abrasiveness we see, I think it's just a reflection of his upbringing, you know, growing up in an elite household and the level of education he had. And it's kind of like how you see, maybe for example, a former gangster turned, you know, Christian. They don't lose their gangster abrasiveness. As a very fact, that trait is what actually helps them as well to, you know, propagate the gospel, right? They're able to like speak to the people who might still be in that lifestyle because they're able to connect deeply with them. And I think a little bit of that stays with all of us who have, you know, we're once in darkness and then when we come into the light. And his story is quite humbling, considering that he had a lot more to lose as a Christian than if he had stayed, you know, non-Christian. I mean, look at his conversion story. My goodness, how many people have survived that?
In a way, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
You know, like his life was not easy.
Mm-mm.
You know, he could have definitely had a much more chill life than he ended up having. With a lot more respect from
his peers,
you know,
and
the kind
his,
of people most people want to be respected by.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think also that honestly, some of the seeming abrasiveness is a combination as well of just our modern sensibilities, to be honest. Like Jesus could be aggressive, and I think people forget that.
Exactly. I mean, he whipped people from a temple. Like Jesus said, he was very sarcastic. Let's not kid ourselves. Like Jesus was the king of sarcasm.
You know, he wants. He had a whole speech where it was basically woe to the leaders, and
as in,
he just, you know, and that's not gentle speech.
Mm-mm. Called you out.
You know, so I think there's an element where some of this stuff is just stuff we wouldn't do today. And I don't think that's necessarily right or wrong. But again, we can't just impose our modern cultural norms onto a time when the cultural norms were quite different.
Yeah.
And when people could speak in a direct manner that we may not be familiar with now. Like, that doesn't mean, like, was he actually perceived as being that harsh? Is a question that I would say I'm not convinced that he necessarily was. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when in a lot of cultures, so for instance, in Nigeria, there's things that we would say to each other that are just normal. Okay, and in other cultures, so like even in this day and time, you know, we still have these examples. So why would you expect, do you see what I mean? Like, so I think that the element where people, again, is the context thing. And instead of trying to understand what the context
from that context,
looking at, we're just assuming, we're just sort of copying and pasting our cultural norms and cultural assumptions.
Expectations.
Onto this time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's no different from how people just take jokes or books that were reading way back, you know, in the day and start saying, oh, this person is mm-hmm. that. You're missing the point. I don't know what your thoughts was going to be. I was going to provide a bit more context, especially for some of our listeners who might not be familiar with Paul, because we just dove in without even putting some parameters in place. Is that okay to start that with? And then you can go on your own thoughts. Is that okay? So Paul, also known as Saul of Tarsus, he was a key figure in the early Christian church. And I would say one of the most influential apostles. I'm kind of like what IMD was saying. He was born a Roman citizen. He didn't buy the citizenship. Let's be very clear about that. He was born a Roman citizen. And that part came out a lot. Actually, one time when they jailed him and they realized that, my goodness, we've touched somebody we shouldn't have touched. And he was raised a devout Jew, you know. He initially persecuted a lot of Christians before experiencing what you call that, the dramatic conversion, you know, the road to Damascus, which has made its way into modern, you know, usage now.
The original road to Damascus.
He did that work, literally. And he survived to tell the story. And following that life-changing event, he became a passionate advocate for spreading the teachings of Jesus Christ. He also had an affliction, which I'm always curious to deduce, you know. What exactly was it? He never really gave, some have said maybe it was an ulcer or something, but he talked about an affliction. And he's been credited with many writings of the New Testament. And they addressed, you know, various theological issues like grace and conversion. What else would you say his book is about? Justification by faith, the concept of the church and as the body of Christ. He was he was all about the law. I imagine in today's day, it would be like a lawyer and, you know, someone who was very particular about keeping a straight line. And yeah, but he was very impactful, and that impact has been marked by a lot of controversies, right? Like we talked about earlier on, gender roles, status of men in church, and have been, you know, interpreted in ways that might not really be quite fair, considering the cultural context that when it was written. But despite these controversies, we can't deny his contributions to Christianity, right? Transforming Christianity from a small Jewish sect into a global faith. And his writings to date continue to be studied, debated, and, you know, making him one of the most influential figures in the history of Christianity. All right, Emine, what was your point?
Well, I was just going to say, I think that... I think it's probably worth looking at the fact that, so let me start with an analogy which I think will be useful for thinking about what we're talking about today.
Mm-hmm.
One of the times when I was listening to these sorts of conversations where people were sort of basically trying to argue about or someone was basically trying to argue that let me start all over again. You might need to take this part out. So there's an analogy.
How many parts am I taking out? One more part,
There's an analogy that I found helpful for thinking about this stuff. And I'll say the analogy first, and then I'll bring it back to how it applies. And it's picture a child who is in a poor country, let's say in a backwoods town in Nigeria or any country like in anywhere in the world. And this child is being sent to school by the parent who is illiterate and never had a chance to go to school. But the parent understands the value of education enough to sacrifice. And they sacrifice a lot, right? So let's say they work two jobs. Because usually these sort of poverty, sort of really poor areas, children usually will be part of the economic aspect of the family. So they will be contributing economically in some way. And so to send a child to school is actually to deprive the family of labor.
Yeah.
And so this parent is having to work extra to make up for the child who's going to school, and they are making sure they can pay for all the things that school requires, including books and school uniforms and whatnot. And they do all of that, and you know, let's say it's an only child, and they do all of that to make sure this child gets an education. And the child goes to school, learns to speak English, learns to read and write.
I see what you're trying to do. I already did.
Right? Learns all of the things.
And then comes back. You
know, let's be very reasoned and educated and very smart. And then comes back and he's talking to the parents. And then he's like, you can't even speak English. Don't do what?
I saw that from a mile away, but I was going to let you land. Oh yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's not for you, though.
I know. I feel bad for the audience, not me.
Right. And the child is looking at the parents and thinking, and actually feeling contempt about the parents and thinking, you're illiterate, you can't read, you can't write, you don't know the things I know, you can't read the books I read. And obviously, like, when you hear it this way, it's obvious that that child is not being very wise, right? That child is not seeing the big picture. That child does not understand that actually the parent understands and values the education far more than they ever did.
Yeah.
Because they sacrificed for it when they didn't even have it.
Yeah.
Whereas the child only got to value it after they got it. Somebody saw it, who did not have it, saw it, valued it, and sacrificed for it, despite not having it, to give it to you, who only got to value it after you got it.
Yeah.
But then you're coming back to look with contempt on them.
Yeah.
And to think you're better than them because of the thing you have that they gave you. Because even though they didn't give you the knowledge you have, they gave you everything you had to be able to get that knowledge. So yes, they gave you that knowledge actually in a deeper way that may be obvious to the child. And I think that, and I'm sure by now everybody can see where I'm going to connect this back to the whole Paul thing. I think that there's an element of this pridefulness, really is the only word for it, that then allows us to look almost with contempt at, and I see people do this with the Old Testament, and I see people do this with Paul, where people don't realize that the fact that we take for granted the virtues of equality, we take for granted the idea of male and female equality, and not just male and female equality, but also equality of all people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And those ideas are rooted very specifically in Paul's writings. Like, there were in Paul's, not just Paul's writing, but Paul's work, because one, they were apart from the fact that most people weren't right, there were people writing about equality, but when you see what they were writing, you realize that they were very different in how they thought about it. It wasn't equality, it's like the Greek democracy, but then you find out, oh, it's democracy only for the real people, where the real people were free men. Not women, and definitely not slaves.
Yeah, right? But so just,
it's
about, yeah.
Oh, it's not, it's the vision wasn't actually a really large vision. Whereas for, it wasn't just that Paul was, because again, there were thinkers here and there through history who've had sort of these ideas. Paul didn't just have these ideas. He had them on a bigger level than anyone we know did. But also specifically worked to build communities of people that were living these ideas out. He gave his life to build these communities.
Especially for those that didn't even agree with him necessarily, right? If you remember. Yes. And that says a lot.
It wasn't just ideas. It wasn't just writing stuff. The man was writing stuff. And actually, all the writing that we have only exists because he was troubleshooting problems in all the different communities that he was building.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wasn't just writing a book of his idea. Paul actually doesn't, like, this is something people don't get. Like, you have your books by philosophers of, oh, these are the things I think about the world. Paul actually doesn't have any such book.
He doesn't have what? Sorry, I didn't get that.
Any such book of, these are my ideas about the world.
No. It was all about the church.
what he has are letters, right?
Uh-huh,
guys, there's a problem here. These are the things you need to be looking at in how you think about this problem. Let me give you the framework. Let me give you the context. Okay, now here's the things you need to do. Here's the things you need to be thinking about. That's all he's writing, right? There's no, so he doesn't even have time to actually put his ideas down in a hole. Because he's just constantly going from place to place and then writing letters to the places where he can't go to say, look, these are the issues I'm hearing about that you're dealing with. Let me remind you of the framework we're coming from. Do you understand what I mean? So it was a working thinker is what I'm trying to say. Like, people sometimes forget that it wasn't an armchair philosopher is what I'm trying to say. It wasn't just thinking about, oh, what is the world like?
No.
And there's not many philosophers like that, actually. Mm-hmm. Most philosophers, pretty much none, very few build communities. Very few tried. A few had schools, you know, so we know that there were schools that grew up around Socrates and Aristotle. But by the time you come beyond that, you don't really find that anymore. Right? And most of them they would have a few people around them, but that was pretty much it. There wasn't any, this guy was not trying to build schools of thinkers. He was trying to build communities of livers. Right? People who were living out these things. And I don't think people realize how big that is, but that's on the side. But then the other thing is, they were a minority, right? They were a small group of people who were not important. Like, there's the bit where Paul says to the Corinthians, right, that not many of you were rich, not many of you were noble, not many of you were anything important. Because the community that Paul was trying to build and raising people to build were communities that basically attracted the outcasts in society. It was women, it was slaves, right? It was the people who people did not take seriously that were coming. So these are not influential people. And people don't, I think sometimes when people, so for instance, when you think about the aspect of why does Paul not talk about slavery in that time? It's like, I'm sorry, do you think this is the US and like they have voting power and they could like start a political party? Like, what do you think? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's. But what people don't realize is that the ideas that he puts down, the ideas that he pushed, the ideas that he was trying to communicate, were the ideas that downstream today, like years and years over the time since then, built into communities that became convinced that actually, do you know what, it's not right to own people. You know, and there's a great example of like, you know, the letter to the guy who slave ran away, and then Paul tells him to take the slave back, but to take him as a brother, which is incredibly radical and revolutionary. Like the kind of things Paul is saying in that letter. And then I think N.T. Wright has talked about how we have a similar letter from Philo.
Oh,
one of the well-known Roman writers and thinkers. Who was writing a similar letter to somebody whose slave had run away. And I can't remember what the differences were, but it was quite interesting how unlike, like, it makes you sort of appreciate the level of radical that Paul was doing in his letter when you compare it to what that guy was doing, which felt more in keeping with the culture. And meanwhile, that guy, for the culture, was even still being nice. That we now take for granted that's downstream of Paul. And then and the misogyny one is, I think, an example of that, where the idea of male and female equality is very much something that a lot of historians have traced back to Paul and to Paul's writings and to Paul's work. And now that we are not at the fullness, because there's still a lot more to be done, but we are at a time when we are farther ahead in human history with male-female equality than humans have ever been. Right? It's easy to look back
and say,
what was wrong with that guy?
Yeah.
Forgetting that that guy is how we got to this point where we're able to say what was wrong with that guy.
Going back to the analogy of the son and the parents who, you know, sacrificed so much, yeah.
Like we are those children looking down with disrespect at our parents.
Nigeria will say,
being contemptuous about them.
And I
think you see that a lot in so many things.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, you know, when people say, we'd not inherit the silence of our mothers. It's like, what? Which silence are you talking about, sir, ma'am?
It's like, maybe that silence is why you have a voice. And I think it's an unfortunate tendency to assume that what is obvious to us would have always been obvious to us in any time, and not realizing that no, actually, like, there's every chance that I think everyone likes to assume that if I was a white person born in slavery times,
I would have
obviously disagreed with this practice. It's like,
or even how they talk about Nazi times, like, you know, if I was an Auschwitz, I would have, you know, chances are you'd have been one of the...
definitely.
Yeah, I'd have helped.
Don't be too sure.
You would have been soldiers killing people, like, calm down, renegade, gladiator.
And the easy way to see that actually is to think, how many things in my time am I actually able to take a position that, if I think that position is right and there's nobody to back me up, how many areas would I be willing to take that position publicly? And before you go back to some time and transplant yourself there, assuming that you can take a stand, like, what are we doing now to take this stance? And I think the minute you do that honestly, the first thing you realize is, yeah, it's hard. And I think there's an element where we forget how much we're shaped by our times, and how much of what we think is obviously good or bad is more socialized than we like to imagine. We just assume, no, it's obviously good or bad to me because I can just see that it's good or bad. It's like, or maybe it's obvious now because you've been taught right. So yeah, I think Paul, you know, yeah, Paul gets a lot of that sort of flack. It's interesting though, because like when you read some of the work of like people like Tom Holland and like, you know, there's a lot of thinkers now who are sort of talking about how there's so much that we take for granted in, especially in the Western richer world, that often gets attributed to Greek and Roman legacy, but actually is very much goes back to Christianity, the influence of Christianity in the West.
Christianity in them, yeah.
You know, and yeah. And again, it's not just the thinking, it's the work of building communities of people that lived out these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it was at cost to them. Because I think that gets underrated so much, that it's not enough that someone sat down and wrote books or letters or whatever. It's mm-hmm. the fact that person put a lot of work into raising communities of people across the known world who lived very seriously by those ideas.
True. So I guess in bringing this to a close in a way, what would you say are some of the lessons should be focusing on, especially for our modern day living, when it comes to the books and life of Paul.
Bra Paul.
Bra Paul.
I don't know. I feel like one aspect is really just that it's remembering that Paul was a pastor, not just a philosopher. I don't even think he considered himself a philosopher at all, even though he's kind of become that. He considered himself more a pastor, right? He was more somebody who considered himself in charge of and responsible for taking care of people's hearts. And I think that was his, in his mind, that was his primary calling. And so you see a lot in his writing about, I wish I could be with you guys. I wish I wasn't in prison writing this. I wish I was actually able to see you guys, but I can't. So I'm just going to write this. Which I always find it funny imagining, like, he must have thought that he was, you know, he was being so underused and like his life was wasting. But actually, it is those letters that he wrote when he couldn't actually see people. That's all. That's the record we have. We don't have any record of when he actually saw the people.
I know. It's a long game. Accounts. Yeah. Yeah.
But we don't have much. And so he would never have known, you know, he would never have known that the thing he was doing, writing letters, because of the, to make up for the thing he really thought he should be doing, seeing people, that thing that he thought was the so plan B turned out to be the most influential thing he ever did.
Mm.
You know, and maybe there's a lesson in that as well, isn't there? Of like, of how life doesn't go the way you want, but you don't know, you know, it's, you don't know what the bigger story is and the bigger picture is. Because there's no way he would have known in his lifetime, I think. I mean, how could he have? Right, like the communities had grown, the letters had grown, but how could he have known that 2,000 years later, those letters would still be read by billions of people around the world?
Yeah.
Like, there's no way he could have known that. So yeah, I think the biggest thing for me when I think about him is the power of not just words, but life, of not just ideas, but life, right?
And building communities too,
Yes, not just... Yeah, and I think ultimately that's the thing that's kept it going, right? It's, you know, I mean, if you take the spiritual side out of it, it's the fact that all around the world, these communities have grown and continue to grow of, you know, men, women, children, who are taking these ideas very seriously. And taking and trying to actually live them out. Even when, as in many cases, there will be a cost to that.
Mm-hmm. True. I think for me, there are a couple of lessons I think we can learn. One is that his life really shows that power of transformation. I mean, looking at his like elite status, being born a Roman and a devout Jew, that radical change from someone who used to persecute Christians to one of the most influential figures of the Bible, it highlights that potential for personal growth and redemption, that no matter how sordid our past was, we have the capacity to change and make a positive impact.
Yeah. I mean, talk about Damascus.
I know.
We Damascus use that a lot.
As a metaphor, yeah.
But again, that's because it's so dramatic, isn't it?
I know.
It's the impact has, well,
I know,
not ended.
I know. Just imagine what his life could have been. I mean, he did great things for God, no doubt about it. If he had just stayed on that path, he was bound for Roman elitism. Like, that, he was born into that kind of family. And then the sufferings he took, consequently, you know, for being a Christian, it was worth it at the end of the day, but another angle would be like, what was it all worth it for, right? I also think that he was quite adept at... another thing we don't really talk about often is his cultural adaptability, which I think is very important for a podcast that talks about culture. I think that Paul was quite adept at engaging with different cultures and societies, which is something that for his status in society and all that, think about it. Like, why should he care about...
Again, the question is why? Why was
exactly,
that?
Exactly.
And what was driving it was, again, that belief that this news is important. This story is important.
And he loved. I think it came from
and
love,
I need
too.
To make... I need to get as many people as possible to understand the importance of this story.
Exactly. Apart from that, I think it came from a place of love. He genuinely cared.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Love had to be the driving force. Like, being able to tailor your message to resonate with diverse audience, right? Come on. It talks about the importance of cultural sensitivity, you know, adaptability.
And again, keep remembering that it was much harder then. Like, now we take it for granted as a good thing. Yeah. It wasn't even taken as a good thing at the time.
Yeah.
Like, why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why would you bother? Why would you do that? Why would you And those communities, ultimately, they were the most, they were the first truly inclusive communities that we, that, you know.
Agreed.
It was, again, one of those things we take for granted. Like, in those communities, when they gather together, those early Christians, a slave could be sitting beside somebody from the governor's of, like, I don't know what they call it, the palace or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that was the sort of community they had. And that was something that was normal. Even now, it's not that normal, let's be honest. Like, one of my favorite stories is, so this, my church is literally next door to my church is a theater. Like, they're side by side. Okay. Church, theater. The only thing between them is literally a fence, right? And so, someone was talking about how he went to the church in the morning, and he went to the theater in the evening. Same day. Church in the morning, diverse. Lots of people from all over the world, different races, different faces. I think we've got like 60 nationalities represented, different social classes, right? Working class, middle class, upper middle class. Goes to the theater and it's just white middle class people.
Mm.
Same town. Same day, side by side, same area of the town. They're both in the town center, side by side, and completely different demographics.
Can you imagine? Right?
And it was such a great picture of the difference that even now, right, you still see in terms of what church does. And what this community can be. And so, yeah, that diversity is something that I think has always been part of. And again, you know, historically, there's been times when it was very seriously pushed back on. And yes, like there's been lots of the history of misbehavior is long and varied.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something special in the fact that I think I can't remember who it was that said that the biggest criticism against Christianity is Christianity itself. Right? Like ultimately the biggest criticism is you're not living up to your values.
Yeah.
Right? It's not that another set of values are important. It's actually that you have these values and you're not living up to them. And I think there's something about how it keeps coming back to those values, and it keeps coming back to, you know, even when, you know, as has happened often, and will probably continue to happen often, the way gets missed. There's still that return that keeps happening again as well.
Yeah, causing the loop. Agree. Oh yeah, two more points for me would be, his writings, I think, really encouraged us to really think critically about our faith, like engage critically with your faith, asking questions and seeking that deeper understanding. Because, again, given that time, whenever this was written, it was super, super patriarchal. You were told what to do. But he really gave you the opportunity to like think about why you believe in this, which I think was very avant-garde, or what's the word? Progressive for that time and age, right? And you also alluded to this.
To be fair, I've also read quite a bit about how that he's coming from a tradition, a long tradition of sort of ancient Hebrew. That's how ancient Hebrews always engaged with their texts.
Oh, I see.
Although again, that was sort of a uniquely ancient Hebrew thing in the time that they were from, where most, you know, there's been other groups of people that had books. But they were particular about how they really took that book as this thing to really engage with on a deep level. And so you see sort of like that story of Jesus in the temple arguing with the teachers.
Yeah.
But like there were teachers for him to argue with. Right? Yeah. And the fact that he could be there. So that was... Now, obviously, I'm just trying to say like it was a tradition that he was continuing. But I don't think he would... Propaganda started the tradition, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the last point, which you kind of alluded to earlier, was about the diversity. He was quite inclusive. Like, when he would say things like, there's neither Jew nor Gentile, nor you're slave nor free, nor is there female or male, for you are all one in Christ. I mean, at that time, I think it was really challenging social divisions and advocates for equality. And this is the message that still resonates with us today, you know, especially for social justice and inclusion under the body of Christ. Like, we're one. So, yeah, that's all from my end.
Hello.
Any other final thoughts before we wrap it up? So I can give you back your time since you decided to leave me so soon today. I mean, we're supposed to have two back-to-back episodes.
And you, my time.
Bailed out.
Not bailed out. Someone came late, okay?
Hello, 5 minutes. I was brewing my coffee. Why do you think I've been so mellow talking about Paul?
You were late to the late time. You were supposed to come at 1:45 was the time.
Oh, yeah,
on the
you
clock.
Know, I mixed it up. I thought it was going to be 9 o'clock. Remember, I was saying that 9 o'clock, 9 o'clock.
I was so focused on that 1:45.
It's okay. I'll catch you next
so
time.
So, to me, you were late by 20 minutes from my point of view. All right.
I owe you 20 minutes of therapy time, whatever you want to use it for. I apologize.
Oh, man, there's a silly song. Oh, we're still recording. I'll tell you about this song later.
Let's just wrap up this episode. Any final thoughts before we go?
I think mainly just the fact of what we started with, which is context. Like, context is important.
Very important.
And when you're reading something like...
Importante.
Like the Bible, which is a book that it's far from us in space and time for most of us, you know, except if you're in the Middle East. And even in the Middle East, the culture has changed a bit from that back in the day. But for those of us that are not in the Middle East, the culture is wildly different. And then the time is wildly different. And there is something to, you know, and again, it's one of those things where it's not even like you have to like read. I don't expect that everybody will read all the things. But there's an element of just being open and being humble. Mm-hmm. And I think this word diversity is also important, actually, because I feel like there's things that I've come to appreciate that coming from Nigeria, I appreciate more when I read the Bible that I didn't appreciate from Western books that I've read, who sort of didn't grasp some of these cultural elements, which maybe still persist in places like Nigeria. You know, one of my favorite ones is the story of the guy who went to a wedding and didn't wear the right clothes.
Oh, yeah?
And I was an adult before I clocked, like, oh, Ashwebi. Right? Like, you turn up and you're not wearing the Ashwebi. You're not there. You're not... You don't belong on a certain level. And now, obviously, that story is not about Ashwebi, but thinking about it from the context of Ashwebi gives me an angle into it that you won't know if you don't know about Ashwebi.
Mm. Right?
Which Ashwebi for non-Yoruba people is literally translates into
family with
plot of the family. Or, you know, like, yeah. So, like, family... the family selected attire, which when you wear it, it's like tartans in Scottish culture.
Yeah.
So it's something like that. Things like that, I think, are, and obviously I've learned a lot from reading Western writing as well. And so I think there's this element of all of us with our different backgrounds, you know, there's things I've learned from women writers that I don't think men writers would have picked up on. Or didn't seem to have picked up on that sort of thing. So there's things you learn from, you know, shepherds, for instance, about Psalm 23, that without reading a shepherd, or, you know, you don't pick up on some of those nuances. And so there's this element of different people coming together and all of us, you know, reading it together and sharing with each other that helps us all of understand it better.
Cool. That's a very, I mean, so many points to that from there. I think if there's one thing to remember is maybe read through the books of Paul yourself and come to your own conclusion. Don't be influenced by what you've been hearing about. There's so much you can learn from his life and his work. So as we wrap up this episode, for me, my thought to leave you with is that whether you're navigating your own path of change or seeking to understand different perspective, or even striving to make a difference in your community, I think there's something in Paul's journey or story that we can all relate to. And yeah, so find that out for yourself. If you've enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to let us know, share this with your friends, let us know how we did. Is it something we left out of our conversation? Let us know as well. Until next time, keep growing and keep embracing the journey. I learned this from Freakonomics podcast. Take care of yourself and then take care of one more person. I think that's kind of neat. Thanks for listening. This was Mo and...
Every day.
I'm really so excited to leave this place. It's not even doing a staggering, but you're meeting. All right, let's go. Fly away, Paul. Fly away, Peter.
Long days and pleasant nights. That's what they say on my favorite podcast from Stephen King.
Fly away, Peter. Come back, Paul. Come back, Peter.
As in.
All right, we'll save the Bangladesh and... The what was that thing? Can you maybe give me a bit more
Bangladesh, but a little black savior.
What was that thing you want to talk about with morality? I really didn't expand on it.
I have to see what I wrote. What did I say? Look, I'm getting old, okay?
You're getting?
Are we still recording, by the way?
I'll leave it on, but I won't. Why do you always break character? Just why? This is just something like you see, you're getting
old. I'm asking you because I wanted to say something.
Oh, should I turn it off then? Yeah.
Yes, please. Thank you.